The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Welcome to We the People, brought to you by the Reading Tea Party. So if you haven't tuned in before, the way to give us a call is 605-4567 on any normal day. Since this is a pre-recorded show, definitely give us a call next week. But you can still kind of catch the show by streaming live at readingteaparty.com and click on the radio show link. So we've got Chandler here today, and actually it's almost 2 o'clock in the afternoon. We're normally here early on a Sunday morning. Gotta tell you, no parking in the middle of the day. No parking at all.
Yeah, it's a good thing we don't do a daytime show. We're just used to sliding in at the 11th hour and parking out front.
Trust me, nobody's opened up the store on a Sunday morning.
Exactly.
There's nobody out there when we roll in.
No coffee, no nothing. So, hey, it's Father's Day for everybody who's listening, so happy Father's Day. Better get that out of the way. And today with us, we have Chris McCafferty, and he's going to tell you all about himself, but I wanted to let you know how I can't say we found him. He found us. I guess he sent emails to how many tea parties, Chris?
Basically, everyone I could find in the United States, all the major ones, so at least 50.
Excellent.
Nice.
And don't you think it's kind of neat that when there is basically an issue regarding fiscal responsibility, losing personal rights, anything along those lines, that people immediately now source out the Tea Party movement?
It's kind of nice.
Yeah, because
they know where to go.
Yeah, the problem was not a whole lot of them actually got back to you, and then I was in the middle of moving, so I didn't get back to you right away. But I thought, even though you were in North Carolina, yes?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, so even though you're in North Carolina, I thought, you know what? We all eat fish.
Well, and, you know, we're dealing with private property rights in this area regarding water and land grabs and, environmental issues that require that everybody sort of shut down their lives. So an issue is an issue, and water's pretty important, and that's kind of where yours is at, correct?
Yes, ma'am.
So
I'm sorry.
That's okay. No, you go ahead.
I snap a grouper fish offshore mostly, and so one of the key issues there is how they're regulating our fisheries and actually taking our freedom to fish in large tracts of the South Atlantic seafloor and on the West Coast as well. That's part of the same way they're trying to grab land on land. They're trying to grab land out there in the ocean, too.
Now, what is their justification for limiting what you can fish and how much?
You have to have annual quotas on fish because you can only harvest so many before you begin to have a negative impact on the total biomass of them. And so if you harvest too many, there won't be enough there for future generations, and your stocks will collapse in time. So I understand the need for that, but they misuse the science that they get. They have what they call the best available science, best available data, and that could be one scientist saying one thing, and that is their best available science that they go on. And so they can use that to reduce quotas to really unnecessarily low levels. Then they can, in the case of our fishery here, they shut down the vast majority of the South Atlantic seafloor based on the lack of data on two fish. And there's a law called the Magnuson-Stevens Act that requires that they basically assume a worst-case scenario if they do not have enough data to do a stock assessment.
Wow. Oh, well, how convenient is that?
Yeah, what happened was, you know, the environmentalist groups, probably a lot of the same ones, Environmental Defense Fund, Pew Charitable Trust, Oceana, different ones like that, lobbied Congress to include a lot of laws that sounded good in theory in that Magnuson-Stevens Act, but then when applied, they have many, many negative impacts, and they're really designed to allow for power grabs. And Congress basically gave a bunch of unelected bureaucrats $1 billion a year and unlimited authority, basically, to write their own laws, usurp the authority of Congress and the legislative branch to write laws, and they can enforce these laws through the barrel of a gun.
And that wouldn't happen to
imprisonment.
That doesn't include Fish and Wildlife Service, does it?
They're kind of a separate branch, separate bureaucracy other than National Marine Fisheries Service. What you have is the Secretary of Commerce is at the head of it. Then you have NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. Then you have National Marine Fisheries Service. And then you have regional councils around the country. I think there's 9 of them in total. And so they all comprise that. And from National Marine Fisheries down, they get $1 billion. NOAA gets much more than that.
Wow. So you deal with, that's why I thought this would be interesting for people, because we spend a tremendous amount of time dealing with issues from the Water Quality Board, EPA, you know, fish and game, fish and wildlife, all that kind of stuff. And when I read some of your story, I thought, oh, this is indeed an entirely different bureaucracy from the other side of the country, but it affects everybody. If you guys can't produce fish, where are we getting our fish from?
Well, 85% of our seafood is imported from foreign countries that have very little environmental law to regulate their fisheries, and a lot of it's raised in farm-raised seafood. And that's where NOAA wants to go in that direction and give big corporations the power to control that and kind of push out the small independent fishermen, kind of like they helped the farmers about 50 years ago. And so with that, farm-raised fish over there in China and Asia, a lot of them are raised in disgusting conditions where it's basically sewage pits that they put cages of chickens over top of those sewage pits, and the droppings are what the shrimp and the tilapia and fish like that eat.
And say it isn't true.
Yeah, it's very disgusting when you start looking into
and
it.
Chris,
and only 1% of that 85% of the imports is checked, and half of that 1% is rejected because it's either contaminated or rotten or unfit to eat in some way.
If we get nothing else out of this 2-hour session, that alone makes it worth it.
Please look for domestic product if you can. That foreign import stuff is not the best way to go by any means. And you can multiply your dollar or increase the value of our weak dollar by buying local seafood from your local seafood market, local restaurants, things like that.
Now, how did you
market works if we use it.
How'd you get into this industry? Is this a family thing?
Well, kind of. My great-grandfather was the last one in my family that actually commercially fished. I started when I was 11 years old, setting nets and clamming and things like that with a neighbor. And then when I turned 16, I worked for a week at McDonald's and decided that I didn't like that, and I wanted to do something that I enjoyed for a living. And so I started working as a mate on a charter boat and got more into the commercial side from there. And just loved the resource, loved being out on the water. And I by no means want to harm the resource. I want to responsibly harvest it, just like 99% of the commercial fishermen. There's always one or two bad ones in the bunch that will misuse the resource. But most of us do want to responsibly harvest it and give the public a dependable supply of safe American seafood.
Well, you know, that's a really large misconception that the public sometimes has about those that actually make their living off the land, whether you're talking about a gold miner or a rancher or somebody that raises cattle.
Those are ranchers.
When you actually make your living off the land or from the resource, you're obviously going to take the best care of it that you can, because it's in your own best interest to do so.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's that golden goose philosophy.
And there's ways that we could actually enhance our resource. You know, if we did it right, we could have more fish out there, feed more people, and bring more money to coastal economies. But the way they're managing it now is they want to shut it all down, basically, and, like I said, you know, set off large areas of the oceans that we're not even allowed to fish in, just have them basically be sanctuaries.
God, it never ends. So tell me this. So you started fishing commercially, so now how does it work? Do you have your own boat? You have a crew? You have just you?
Yes, ma'am. I started as a mate, worked my way up to having a little skiff that I worked in the Sound and worked offshore on another boat. And now I own my own snapper boat and permit. And it's a very large investment. It's not an easy thing to get into. And I was doing great. I employed a man and sometimes two. And, you know, we made an honest living. We worked hard at it. It's not always the safest conditions out there in the middle of the ocean in a little 28-foot boat that we stay out there for 3 or 4 days at a time. So, you know, it's something that we knew the risk, but we loved the job, and we went out there. We worked hard. We made a good living at it, and we benefited society. We gave them a product that they wanted at a fair market price. And then they started with these regulations where they just started closing down one fishery after the other, and got to the point I was having to discard more fish than I could legally sell. And it broke my heart because these fish that come up, especially from deeper water, like I fish in over 100 feet of water, they end up dying slowly from decompression damage after you discard them. And it just is such a waste.
I read
there's
that.
A better way to do it.
I read that in your solutions. We need to take a break and thank our advertisers. We'll be back in 2 minutes with Chris McCafferty, and we'll be talking more about fishing, commercial fishing, something most of us don't know a whole lot about. You are listening to We the People Radio at KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
I hear people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country.
Welcome back to We the People, brought to you by the Reading Tea Party. This is a pre-recorded show, folks, so don't give us a call, but you can stream live by going to readingteaparty.com and clicking on the radio link. So as you know, I do like to reiterate these facts that the main premises behind the Tea Party movement are limited government, fiscal responsibility, and adherence to the Constitution. So we try to keep our topics related to those three areas, and today is no different. We're talking about power grab, land grab, water grab, shutting out the small guy, making it really difficult for the private sector to survive in the free marketplace.
Just making it hard for the free marketplace. And it really frustrates me because this one's about fish, and I love fish. Okay, so we're here with Chris McCafferty, who is a... What are you called? Are you called a professional fisherman as opposed to the ones who just
commercial
talk about it?
Commercial fisherman is what they call
it. There you go. You're a commercial fisherman.
And you know, just to clarify, a lot of people might think that we stick to local issues, but Chris, you're from North Carolina.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah,
so
that's happening everywhere.
I appreciate you giving me the chance to inform the West Coast about what's happening over here.
Well, it's happening out here, too. But I figure the people who are, you know, like anything, the people who are really passionate about it, who really have something to say, those are the people you obviously want kind of sounding the alarm because people listen to that. So before we took our break there, you were telling us about the discarding of fish. And I had read that on your website, freefish7.com?
Yes, ma'am.
Am I right? Okay.
Yeah, what it's called is they're called regulatory discards by National Marine Fisheries Service when there's a law that dictates that we have to discard a fish, throw it back after we catch it, regardless of whether it will live or die. And they actually are aware that many of these fish die. They reduce our allowable catch by about 30%, the count on those fish dying after we discard them. You know, and they come basically from two main reasons over here on the East Coast. One is because they did not manage the quotas properly and shut the season down prematurely. And right now we're having, it's called derby fisheries, where you have to go out and catch as many fish as you can, as quick as you can, before that season is closed. And so that floods the market, drives the price down. Mm-hmm. Like right now we're in the middle of a black sea bass derby fishery, where a $5 a pound fish has dropped down to $1.20 a pound to the boat, because they flooded the market. So now once this quota is met here in a couple of weeks, those fish will be illegal to sell for the rest of the year until, I think, January. And then and we'll just have to throw them all back after that. And so it's just an absolute waste of the resource. The other way that they have size limits, or the other way that they create regulatory discards, and I agreed with them in theory at first because they didn't have any annual quotas in place. And so that deterred people from sitting there and catching a lot of little fish. They would move to another area and try to catch some bigger ones. But now that we have annual quotas in place and possession limits, then really the size limits are counterproductive. You're ending up throwing back these fish that end up dying anyway, suffer for a little while till they finally do die. And so then, you know, if we just keep what we catch until our possession limits are met, then we can count them all against the quotas, have higher quotas, feed more people, make wise use of the resource, and collect accurate data to use in credible stock assessments.
So, Chris, what was the impetus for this whole regulatory mess? I mean, what was the one thing that started this whole issue?
Well,
and how long ago?
Well, it was the reauthorization of the Magnuson-Stevens Act a few okay. years back. But it also goes back to, I believe it was 1991 or two, when they did the Agenda 21. And I saw some of that on your website. That's a big part
yes.
of what's happening with your land grabs
well, out
there.
I'm starting
there.
To hear that term thrown around more and more, yay.
Yeah, you know, and when I first heard it, I kind of thought, like everybody else, that sounds like a conspiracy. There's not some worldwide plot to control every aspect of our lives. but actually there really is. You know, if you look at it, they want to dictate how we use our land, how we raise our food, how we harvest our seafood, where we can and can't fish, who is allowed to fish, you know, and all kinds of different stuff like that. I haven't read all of what is involved in it, but I've read enough on the land and the sea side of it to understand that it is not a good thing. And people, you know, they count on the apathy of people, both in America and all over the world, to just sit by and think that this can't really happen, this isn't going to happen, it'll all work out. But it has, you know, it doesn't. People have to get involved, and that's where the Tea Party is a great thing. And if people will make their voice heard, you can have one person that's like me that really speaks out, but my voice means nothing on its own if it is not united with thousands of other liberty-loving Americans' voices that will stand united and say, this is not right, there is a better way to do it.
And, you know, it's kind of funny because you're a fisherman, you're a commercial fisherman. Who on earth would ever have thought that you would become an activist?
Yeah.
You know, you're
probably
taking,
wasn't high on your list, huh?
And you know, you're the epitome of the hardworking American who just wants to earn a fair living, an honest living, pay their way through the world, raise their families, be involved in their communities, and we're being forced. All of us have been that way. None of us were activists. I mean, I don't think Aaron and I ever thought we'd be sitting in front of two radio microphones. So
talking about commercial fishing.
Yeah. And so when you started pushing this issue, have you been able to get others behind you in your industry?
Actually, I have a great support system in the industry, and the individuals are the ones that, you know, once I sit down and talk to them a little bit, then they see that there is, you know, we basically have the same end goal, the bureaucracy and the fishermen, and everyone wants a healthy fishery that can be responsibly harvested. It's how you reach that end goal. Can you do it with very little negative impact, or do you destroy men's lives and their jobs and take our freedom in the process? And so that's where I want to offer. A Marine once told me, if you're going to complain, you need to have a solution to that problem that you're complaining about. And so, you know, that's what I try to do, is not just complain, but as I do, point out, this is a way to do it based on my decades of on-the-water experience and my love of the sea, that I think we can do it without wasting all these fish, without compromising our safety at sea, and also, you know, restricting the public's access to those public resources.
Well, you know what happens with government regulations is they actually create the perceived problems that they thought existed in the first place that were never there. So now you've
Now
you've got fish dying needlessly, and you've got 70% of seafood coming from countries that have no environmental protection. They have no standards, so people are eating very unhealthy seafood.
I don't like the part about the chickens.
No, and I encourage everybody, especially the shrimp. The shrimp and the tilapia are the two worst for that. You know, and so when you go to Walmart and you see that stuff that's, you know, fairly cheap, you know, compared to going to the seafood market and getting local seafood, you know, you're paying a price there in another way. And we do have a great resource here. Our seafood does not contain a bunch of antibiotics and hormones like that farm-raised seafood does. They're free and wild until they're caught and harvested. And when they're harvested responsibly, when we catch a fish, we kill it quickly and we use it wisely. You know, and that's the way it should be. Anytime you wound an animal, whether it's on land or in the sea, you really are honor bound to kill it quickly and put it out of its misery. We should not torment that animal just in the name of conservation.
Yeah, true story. And flipping them back after they've come up 100 feet from the bottom of the ocean violates that principle big time. So
yeah, they do things. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, so give us a timetable. You said you started working in you know, in the fishing industry when you were like 11. And so how old are you now?
I'm 38 now.
Okay. And so, like, how much of that time have you been kind of an independent guy?
Well, it's basically you're self-employed.
I know, it's like a
process. Work on somebody else's boat. I get a 1099 form, and I would pay my own taxes and everything at the end of the year. So you're freelance all along. But then I did work my way up to owning my own boat and everything. And it's just something that it's either you love it or you don't want to do it. If you're in it just for the money, you did the wrong thing because you're going to be miserable. There's a lot of times you're out there, the fish don't want to bite or the weather's terrible, you know, and you just aren't sure what's going to happen out there. You could be run over by a ship. There's all sorts of problems that can come up. So it's something I've done for over 20 years offshore now that I just I wanted to do it the rest of my life, but it got to the point now that I never want to fish again if I'm going to have to go about it in the way that they are setting it up. I tied my boat to the dock, and I haven't fished commercially since last September because of what they're doing, so I can take the time to fight this.
Wow. You know, my husband is in the timber industry, Chris, and I don't know if you're familiar with what the environmental agencies have done to the timber industry. But all but just all but destroyed it. And, you know, I was aware of the regulatory agencies 10 years ago because he has been fighting them that long. And every year it gets worse and worse and worse and worse. And the fair-minded individual tries to find the logic in things. And in addition to being frustrated by unreasonable expectations, you're trying to find the logic in these regulations, and there is none. And he very much feels the same way about his industry as you do yours. And that's very, very sad. Because you are truly...
You can have a responsible harvest of the logs and the timber. And that's something that, you know, people don't realize. And I've talked to some people in the logging industry. I actually met the swamp loggers that are on TV a couple of weekends ago. And, you know, pointed out to them, not everybody can go out and harvest their own lumber, you know. And so they give the public that access to those resources, just like the commercial fishermen provide the public with access to those resources. And, you know, some of the people that I've talked to point out, you know, like the older trees, nobody or none of the environmentalists want you to cut down an old tree. But really, that old tree has outlived its the best of its life because as it's growing, just like a teenager absorbs lots of food as it's growing, the tree absorbs lots of the carbon dioxide as it grows. And so you end up, it cleans the air better. As it's younger, once it reaches the maturity, then it basically levels off just like somebody at my age. You know, I don't have to eat as much as I did 10 years ago.
And it,
working at it.
Yes, and the canopy of those larger trees prevents the smaller trees from growing.
That's exactly right. They don't get the sunlight that they need.
Back to junk science again. Okay, so all right. So when you started in this industry, is this something that the people where you live, is this what most people do? Are you in
it? It was the major industry in this area for a long time, and there's a great heritage behind it that is being eroded and lost. And it will be lost within the next generation if we can't stop what's happening to our fisheries. And it will just, what is left of them will be controlled by large corporations and will be working for them, basically. But it was something that built this area, like just like the Northeast, the cod fishing. We had what we call mullet here that a lot of people set nets for. And then as the boats became, you know, bigger and the electronics got to where we could go offshore, we started going for snapper and grouper and the mahi and tuna, stuff like that. And, you know, so it's just a matter of balancing that responsible harvest. And it can go on, just like Jesus himself caught fish commercially with gill nets 2,000 years ago in the Mediterranean. They still do it in the same way, in the same place, because it is a renewable resource that, if done properly, will be there forever.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. We do have a 2,000-year history in one location. Haven't depleted the resource there either.
Yeah. It's like trees. Trees grow back.
Well.
Yeah, you can, just like Easter Island, cut down all their trees too quick before they could grow back. So you do have to have a balance there. We could go out there and we could wipe out stocks of fish very quickly if we really wanted to, you know, if there were no regulations and that was the goal. But that's not the goal of the fishermen. That should not be the goal of the regulations either. But that is an unintended consequence of what's happening now. We have a fish called a trigger fish out here that has become the primary target when everything else is closed because they didn't have any regulation on it yet. And so now those poor fish have been targeted for 2 years now, just nonstop, and their numbers are dwindling. You know, and the price has plummeted on them, so you have to catch more of them to make enough money. And the fishermen, they have no choice. There's no way. They still have the boat payment, the insurance, slip rent, everything still is there. And when these things are closed down, other fisheries, they have to make some money somehow.
Yeah, they still have the cost of doing business.
Brutal. All right, we're coming back because I need to know more about trigger fish. I'd have never even heard of them. Well, you are listening to We the People here on KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
Don't let them kick your neighbor off his land. This is where we gotta make a stand.
Welcome back to We the People. We are brought to you by the Reading Tea Party. I want to encourage you to go to readingteaparty.com, click on the radio link, and check out our media page. Now, what you'll find there are all the details about today's guest, any websites associated, any contact numbers. You will find all of our previous shows archived, so there's no reason not to go back and get learned in lots of different topics. And you'll also find a list of our advertisers and our sponsors. So we're back with Chris from North Carolina, commercial fisherman, who is dealing with EPA regulations and
you have a whole
power
list.
Grabs.
List your regulatory agencies, because this is a bunch that we're in the center of the state, so we don't hear about these a lot.
Well, we have NOAA, which is the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. They're the ones that botched the cleanup of the oil spill in the Gulf. And I would, after dealing with them, I'm not so sure they didn't just intentionally botched that job in order to say that these oil rigs are evil and we don't need them, when in reality those oil rigs in the Gulf are they're artificial reefs, and they have greatly increased the total biomass of fish that the Gulf can support since they've been put there. But back to the list of agencies, National Marine Fisheries Service is the next bureaucracy under NOAA, and then you have the councils. My regional council is the South Atlantic Fishery Management Council, and there are eight other ones around the country that manage different areas. And then you have your Division of Marine Fisheries in the states, and then you also have the Fish and Wildlife. And I'm sure there's a couple other that have some jurisdiction, like the Coast Guard has some jurisdiction over us. And so I've been bordered by three different agencies on my boat in one trip at times.
Jeez. Oh, really? So they just...
Yes, ma'am. One of the one time that I was boarded three times, everything was fine. All my fish were legal, except for one guy in the North Carolina Division of Marine Fisheries decided that a fish called a scamp grouper, it's a total length that they had to be 20 inches. And this is one of those bad side effects of the size limits. It's kind of arbitrary and open to interpretation. So anyway, the total length of that fish was about 20 and a half inches long in the 20-inch size limit. And he said that the little tasse on the end of the tail didn't count as the length of the fish. And so he said, well, what do you think I'm going to do with this now? I said, well, you'll probably take it home and eat it. He said, no. I said, well, you need to give it to the homeless then. No, and he just took it and threw it overboard. Even though it was a legal fish, he knew he couldn't write me a ticket for it, because if he brought it into court, it would have been a legal size. He just stole my fish and my money and threw it over the side.
What?
Yeah.
Well, that
and,
is...
And that same guy, he had something about size limits. He really wanted to enforce them. He got on a boat, we call them head boats, where you can fit up to about 100 people, and they take them offshore fishing for the day. And I had fished with the captain of that boat commercially during the winter on that boat that that guy went on. But they had a whole SWAT team, people in boots, black dress, you know, the machine guns in their hands. And he got up in that captain. They boarded the boat, would not let anybody off of the boat, told the captain with his finger in his face, wagging it at him, and the gun in the other hand, that he knew he was breaking the law and he was going to catch him. And they were going to search every inch of that boat till they found something they could give him a ticket for.
Wow.
And they searched every inch, but they never found anything.
And so they're out.
Because I know the captain. And
they're out in the middle of the ocean, and they're just fishing, and then...
Well, they waited till they got back to the dock and did that. So you had there was probably 70 people on the boat. It was a weekend, and they they were terrified with people waving machine guns in their face, and threatening, you know, that they wanted to find that fish that was 16th of an inch shorter than some arbitrary length that they had picked. And fish, when you catch them, will be about a 16th to an eighth of an inch longer than they are when they get cold, because they'll shrink a little bit when they get cold when you put them on ice.
Do you find that
you can have a fish that is legal size when you measure it? Then when you bring it into the dock, he just may be a little bit short, and depending on how the person is that is checking you, he can either understand that or he can give you a ticket.
Do you find that these people from these regulatory agencies actually don't really know anything about what you do?
Yes, ma'am. They learned in college. Somebody told them how to think about something, and they have a very narrow view of it. If a commercial fisherman comes up, they say stuff like, you know, the fox can't guard the hen house. Well, that's a terrible analogy, because it's not like you're giving the sharks the power to dictate how the fisheries are managed. It's like giving the farmer that harvests the chickens and the eggs and things like that power to control how his stocks of birds are managed. And so the fishermen need to have some input in this and how we manage these fisheries. And that's what I try to offer, those solutions that would allow us to responsibly harvest it and stop discarding all of these fish and knowing that they're going to die anyway.
So what caused you to finally just, you know, tie up your boat and walk away last September?
Well, what happened was back in the September before, in 2009, a fellow fisherman, we were fishing a narrow strip of water where there was a few legal fish, one of them being that trigger fish and the other being a vermilion snapper that we could legally sell. So it was the middle of winter time. The NOAA weather forecast was calling for 10 to 15 knot winds and 2 to 4 foot seas. It was actually blowing 25 with 6 to 8 foot seas. And a mate on another boat that was just a few miles from me got knocked overboard as he was trying to pull in the anchor. And I talked to the captain shortly after that. He told me he grabbed hold of him, but the boat surging up and down in those 8-foot seas, he couldn't pull him over the side because he had all his foul weather gear on, boots and all of that. And the man looked up at the captain, turned loose his grip, and sunk out of sight and was never seen again. And he was out there trying to support his 19-month-old baby. You know, and then when I told the fishery council about this, the Roy Crabtree is the main one, that he's the regional administrator for the National Marine Fisheries in our area, and he told me, well, he knew it was dangerous before he left the dock, you know, and it was just, it broke my heart to see how callous and cold they were, and that there was did not appear to be any level of lost life or liberty that they would not, you know, support in their efforts to destroy our fisheries and put us out of work.
Wow.
Do you? That's what motivated me in the first to go do this. And I had actually warned them. I told you it was September. It was actually January 10 when he did it. But September of 2009 is when we started seeing the closures. And then in December of 2009, I went to the council and I pointed out exactly what was happening and how these closures were going to force fishermen to fish in worse weather and take more risk, and it would compromise our safety. And they, you know, they turned down the offer or the solution that I offered, said that it was not feasible that they could do it. And so they just continued with the Derby fisheries. And that's when that man lost his life. And from there, it just kept on getting worse and worse with the regulations, that one thing closing after the other, and got to the point I just, like I said, I had to throw back more than I was allowed to sell. And it just got, you know, it was disgusting. It went against everything I believe as a fisherman and a Christian. I believe we should be wise stewards of the environment. You know, these fish, just like most every other resource, really, are gifts from God that were put here for us to use and use responsibly.
Jeez.
Yeah, we're nodding our heads
here.
That's
when I tied my boat to the dock after I got disgusted with discarding all those fish and seeing my fellow fishermen die. And I said, you know, I have the ability to speak about this. I'm not afraid to go out in public and do it. I may look like a fool sometimes. I may not sound exactly right on the radio.
No, you sound great, by the way.
I've studied this. Well, I appreciate that. I hope my accent isn't too much for y'all to
No, it's always fun for us.
There.
We love accents. We get bored with California voices. We like somebody new.
We had Kentucky on a couple weeks ago, some musicians, and that was fun, too.
He was hilarious. Jim Bob.
All right.
Is that Jim Bob?
Mm-mm. Wow. Right.
So, yeah, I just wanted to go fight this, basically. I believe that, you know, God gave us our freedom as well as these gifts and our natural resources. You know, and the brave men and women in the military defend that freedom for us. And if all I have to do is get up and give a speech or go on TV and say some words, you know, that's nothing compared to taking up arms and going to a foreign country and defending our freedom against foreign enemies, where all I have to do is just argue with some domestic enemies that would take our freedom. So I really believe it is my duty to God and country to do this, and I'm going to do it to the best of my ability, and I will fight, and I will fight just like that guy in Chicago. I will fight until we win, or they kill me one.
Hmm. Well, tell me this.
They won't kill me.
Yeah, hopefully not. Tell me about what's your ability to push back on this. I mean, is this is there an outcry where you are, like up north of us, where they're really just stripping them of their water rights and stuff? They have formed some pretty strong coalitions, although there is not a large population. They have they've grown really strong as community and pulled together. They show up at all the public meetings or different hearings about these, you know, stupid little regulations and stuff. Are you finding that your community's pulling together and you get to, are you being able to be a spokesperson for them? Or
To some extent, you know, what happened was a lot of the fishermen just felt like everything they said fell on deaf ears, and it made no difference what they said. The bureaucracy was going to do what it wanted to do. And so some of them have quit going, and they all applaud what I'm doing and going and doing this, and they support me in it, but they don't want to get out there. They don't want to be on TV, you know, and I can understand that. You know, most of us just want to go, you know, harvest some fish, cash our check, and spend some time with family after that. You know, not go through all this, but, you know, I don't mind being the spokesperson. And what it takes is somebody like me that's willing to be the front man and the main voice, but then getting the support from the, you know, the consumer. If we can get the support of consumers of seafood behind us, then we go from just a small little minority group without the money, power, or numbers to defend ourselves to a large group of people that can demand the wise management of our resources. And we all need to get together, you know. That's what I tell people. If you'll stand with me in defense of this freedom that I love, you can tell me where to sign your petition or make the phone call, and I'll do it, and I'll stand with you to defend the freedom that you love. And if we all did that, we could keep all of our freedoms, and we would remain free people.
Exactly. That's perfect. If we could just shorten that, we should put it on a T-shirt, and we should all wear them. That's exactly the point. I mean, people...
Well, and you know, something that I found as a photographer, I wish I could claim that I came up with this idea, but somebody else told me when I was trying to get people to make phone calls and send emails, they said, well, why don't you put one of these pictures on a postcard and, you know, put the address of who you want to get it on there and write a little something and then leave a space for the suggestions, you know, the comments section and their name. And so I did that, and I've been... doing things with postcards now, sending out thousands to different people, and I have a very good response from just the general public that they see that, it's got a pretty picture, they like what it says, and they agree with it, and they're willing to do that. But if they have to go home, look up an address, write a letter, send it out, all that stuff, they're not, you know, some will do it, but very few will. Where the postcard, almost everyone that I've asked to do it is willing to do it. And so that, I would encourage people out there in California, your husband included, get people involved. And people want to have wood to build their houses and decks and different things, you know. And
that's
right. They don't want it all to come from overseas, where you're actually having, you know, like, again, very little environmental regulation. And then you're shipping that stuff from overseas, so you have that added fuel and, you know, impact to the environment by doing that.
Yeah, right now we're selling our wood to China. They're making the furniture and selling it back to us. Gee, that makes a whole lot of sense.
Great cycle.
Yeah, isn't that something?
Here was one. Here was your postcard. I was quick looking this up online at freefish7.com, and your website there, and it's a sample of one of the postcards, and it's this great picture of a fishing boat out in the ocean with the sun setting behind it, and on there is printed, Chairman Hastings, please start an investigation into the mismanagement of our fisheries by NOAA, NMFS, and the regional councils before our fishing heritage and jobs fade into the sunset.
That's really clever.
I bet. Perfect. That's awesome. It beats a form letter any day. Your pictures are phenomenal.
You know, also with the people being scared about the letters now, they're having to x-ray them and all that kind of stuff, where this is just one piece of paper, basically a thick piece of paper that, you know, people can see there's no powder inside, there's nothing but just the words on it. And so you know, when the politicians start seeing that thousands of people feel the same way as what the things I've been trying to say, or whoever is going to do that kind of thing, then they will listen. If it's just one or two people making their voice heard, they'll disregard it, because unless they have money to buy that influence, they could care less what one or two people had to say.
You would think that the commercial, well, okay, is this the same as other things? Okay, the commercial fishermen do have a pretty good lobby in Washington, but it's really for the big corporate fishermen, not the guys like you?
Yeah, basically, because they're the ones that have the money, the small fishermen, especially now. We kind of got blindsided by this. When they reauthorized that Magnuson-Stevens Act, I thought what they would do is reduce the quotas by 10 to 20% and put trip poundage limits in place on the commercial side to where we could harvest some fish throughout the entire year. The prices would remain high, the consumer would have access to them all year, and the stocks would rebuild from decades of mismanagement. And I was way off. They had no intention of doing something that made sense. They come out with 400-page documents for almost every rule that they make, you know, and they hide all kinds of things in there, like when the area closure that I mentioned to you about the offshore 240 feet out to 200 miles, which is about two-thirds of our South Atlantic seafloor. You know, they just took that freedom based on the lack of data on two fish, and they can do whatever they want.
And yeah. Reversing it is like literally an act of Congress. We're going to be right back with Chris.
Well, we have a rare chance now to do that. They're actually giving us a chance because of the public outcry that they are going to look at an amendment to suspend that area closure. And we can stop it if enough people will let them know that we do not want them to, or we want them to suspend that area closure. And we were able to get them to suspend a 4,800 square mile area closure last year for the red snapper.
And, wow, we've got something similar going on with our forest roads. Anyway, okay, time for a break.
Do you need to take a break and thank our advertisers? We'll be right back. We need more information on that, Chris. We're talking to Chris McCafferty, a commercial fisherman. I always want to call him a professional fisherman.
He'd probably like that.
As opposed to all those dads on Father's Day out there trying to teach their kids how to fish. Here at We the People Radio on KCNR, 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
To We the People, brought to you by the Reading Tea Party. To join us streaming live, go to readingteaparty.com and click on our radio link, and everything you need will be right there on the radio page. Great media page created by our friend Robert. Everything you need to know, all the archive shows. We've got Chris McCafferty, a commercial fisherman from North Carolina. We're talking about all of the regulations by the different agencies, federal, state, local, kind of shutting down the fishing industry on the north or the eastern coast. But Chris, you've got it. I wanted to, before you get into more of the regulations, you've got a calendar that you've created. Tell us a little bit about that. And is it a fundraiser? Where can people access it? Are the monies going in any particular place?
Yeah, what I did was I'd always enjoyed photography and taken a lot of pictures while I was out on the water. And we have some great stuff here on the Outer Banks of North Carolina. We have wild horses that are descendants from Spanish shipwrecks that live on the Outer Banks. And so my son and I, we'd go over there and camp out sometimes, and I would set the nets while he set up the tent. And we'd go track down the horses and take pictures and a lot of other scenery, too. But what I did was I made the calendar as a way to fund my fight, to go around and talk with people about this and to take the time necessary to go to the meeting, to write the letters, to make the phone calls. I spend quite a bit of time doing all that stuff. And so, like I said, it broke my heart to have to turn back all those fish and let them die anyway. And so I just tied the boat up, and I used this as a way to continue making my payments on the boat and going out, putting gas in the truck, going to these meetings, and doing this kind of thing, fighting for our freedom, basically. And so I don't want a handout from anyone. I wanted to use the talent God gave me in the free market to create a source of income that would allow me to do this and offer people a quality product, that's made in America and has a good cause behind it. And I've offered it on my website now at freefish7.com on the Natural Art Photography Shop page, where you can get 5 of the calendars for $20, and I'll mail them to you. I'll pay the shipping, I'll pay the tax and everything, because right now I'm trying to raise some money to make the payments to pay off the calendars, and then I can go forward with making some money.
That's a good deal.
Keeping my business going.
That's a great deal.
Holy cow. I didn't know that.
Yeah, well, I sold them for $10 a piece normally, but I figured, what I did was I got 2,000 more of them this year so that I could do a really good price break, kind of promote my website, get this message out there, and give people a way to get, if you get 5 calendars, you've got 1 for yourself, and then you've got 4 others to give as gifts through the year. Stick them up in your closet and just pull one out when you need to give a birthday present or something like that. And so $4, you've got a great gift, a unique gift that has pictures in it. It's not just a bunch of fish being killed. It's the scenery of what we see out there.
Oh, the pictures are gorgeous.
Almost anybody can enjoy it.
Oh, yeah, the pictures are beautiful. I really like November. November 2012
yeah, with
a big, tall pier going out into the mist. That's fantastic.
Chris, I was a professional photographer for 20 years, and we could get off on that topic, but we won't. I'd love, what medium, what format do you use? Is that 4x5?
I just use the Canon. I started with just a Canon digital or Canon 35mm
okay.
Rebel, and then I got the digital. Now I'm at the 60D, and I really love it.
Okay.
But, I love taking pictures of everything from bugs to lightning.
Yeah, they're gorgeous.
Yeah, your lightning pictures are awesome, too.
Hey, if you're any kind of a fisherman, if you can fish as well as you can take pictures, boy. You're awesome.
Well, that's what I'm hoping in time. I can fight for the proper management of our fisheries. I can go back to do that. And then I can have this photography stuff set up as well so I can make some money at that. I'd really like to be a fair weather fisherman where I just go when the weather's nice instead of being out there and the water spouts and lightning and all, 8-foot, 10-foot seas, all that good stuff. But isn't necessarily fun. It can be exciting, though. I was out there one time, and a water spout came over the boat. So I'm one of the few that got to go out on the back deck and actually ride out a water spout and get hit by it. So
what does that mean?
Something interesting. And, luckily, it wasn't a very strong one.
Hey, Chris, what does that mean? What
people get to ride out a water spout.
What does water spout mean? What does that mean? It sounds exciting.
It's a tornado over the water.
Oh.
So they're usually not as strong. You do get some really big ones, but this one was probably blowing 70 knots in it. So it wasn't too strong.
Really? And so it's like a giant tornado made out of water?
Well, basically, yes, ma'am, that's what it is. The water, you know, the water vapor really gives it a well-defined form and shape, so you can see it coming down from the cloud. It'll start out as a funnel cloud, and then slowly you'll see it wind down. Usually they're kind of narrow, and they'll, you know, almost dance on the water doing, you know, kind of shifting shape and form, and you'll see four or five of them sometimes in one cloud. And so it's something that I'll try to get close enough to get some pictures of them and enjoy seeing them. If it's, you can kind of tell if it's a really strong one that you need to stay away from. But I don't like the tornadoes on land, but the water spouts in the water generally aren't that bad.
Well, I learned a new little bit of water lingo. Water spouts. Well, yeah, we need to see some pictures of those. I don't see any on here.
Yeah, but that's a little dangerous to be out there trying to get those pictures. That's like being a tornado chaser.
Yeah, that's. I'm hoping I can get some more good ones as soon as I go back fishing. The ones I've got in the past, either I was trying to get away if I was too close, or if I was far enough away that they're just not the quality that I would like to put on there. When I put one in the calendar, I want it to be something that you say, "Wow, look at that."
I don't know. The description sounds good. All right, so now we have. I'm really glad we hit the calendar. We're gonna. Talk about that a little bit again later, because I don't want people to miss that. That's something that very rarely do you know the story behind the people who take the pictures. You know, we all have calendars and pictures and things like that in our offices and in our homes, and who knows where the people were and who they were. This is kind of cool. We get to actually meet you, and we get to see a little bit of where you live. Tell us, though, about the red snapper closure that you kind of ended with in that last segment. That was something that you guys won, yes?
Well, we did not want it to be closed. They were going to close all of our water from North Carolina, South Carolina border down to the middle of Florida, from 98 feet of water out to the other closure that they did pass from 240 foot out. But anyway, so there was a lot of public outcry about it. They reduced it down in size to 4,800 square miles off of Georgia and Florida, and we continue pointing out that these stocks of red snapper are increasing. This is an unnecessary move, because we would not be allowed to fish for any fish, any bottom fish, in the area that they closed off. And so we were able to get that suspended. They actually passed it. The Secretary of Commerce signed it into law. But before it actually took effect, they came out with another, what they call a regulatory amendment, and they suspended that area closure. But that's a 400-page bill. That there's things in there. It's still a terrible idea what they are doing, because one of the things they did was mandated the use of circle hooks to release these fish. And, again, it's one of those things that sounds good in theory, but in practice, it has a terrible consequence of breaking the fish's jaw if it is not removed properly. So now you've got fish that you're discarding that will slowly starve to death and suffer because they have a broken jaw.
Oh, drats.
How does that help anything? Yeah,
it doesn't.
So they're not going to allow us to keep any red snapper. They're going to assume that enough, or they're going to guess when enough of them have died after we've discarded them. I believe it's 80,000 pounds is what they set the quota at. So they're planning on fishermen discarding 80,000 pounds of these fish a year.
That is not
good. And once
they
deem that the quota has been met by discarding those fish, they gave themselves the power to take unspecified, drastic action against the American citizens to stop the capture of any more red snapper.
Whoa. Okay, hold on, Chris. We've got to take a break here. We went over last time, so we got a little short segment here. We'll be right back with We the People. We're talking about commercial fishing here on KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
back to We the People, brought to you by the Reading Tea Party. Go to readingteaparty.com, click on the radio link. You'll find our media page. You can stream live, find out all about our sponsors, all of our past shows, and today's guest. And today's guest is Chris. He's a commercial fisherman from North Carolina. And if you think all land issues and water issues are only inherent to the West Coast, so not true. So, Chris, why don't you pick up where you left off?
All right. I was telling you about the unspecified drastic action that they hid in the middle of 400 pages of lawyer speak, and this is Amendment 17A that the South Atlantic Fishery Management Council passed. And anyway, so I asked the council what that meant. Were they going to shut down the rest of the South Atlantic to any fishing, any bottom fishing, once they deemed that quota had been met? And they said they can do whatever they want, basically. So they can. They can come in and shut down the rest of our South Atlantic once they think they have forced us to discard enough fish, and those fish have died and in sufficient numbers to for 80,000 pounds of the quota to be met.
Wow.
So that's what they do. That's why they write these things so big. And you have a bunch of academics that get in there, and the environmentalists, and they help write these laws and push these bureaucrats to put in there what they want to be there.
Right on.
And so really,
that's what they're doing.
They have the power to do all sorts of things to us, and they usurp the authority of Congress, and they can just write laws, and they have guns, the fish police, they have guns that they can use against us, and they enforce these laws through the barrel of those guns.
Because you're a bad, bad, bad person for going out and fishing and making a living. Shame on you. Well, now, the part, I know this isn't, we spend all our time here on issues that especially things we're not familiar with, and the whole time you're thinking, well, that doesn't make any sense. So I have to always remind myself, oh yeah, it's not supposed to make sense. But I don't get the part about the discarding of all these tons and tons of fish. Why would they want you to just throw them all back?
Well, they do it in the name of conservation, and there's another the darker side to it that I believe they're trying to get the fishermen to embrace catch shares. And so they're creating these derby fisheries, financially ruining us in order to get us to accept anything other than what we have right now.
And what's a catch share?
If anybody watches The Deadliest Catch on TV, it's back about 5 years ago, I think they did that on there, where there was probably 200 boats that fished for those crabs, and then the catch shares came in, and so the big boats that had lots of money and had caught lots of crab in the past were the ones that ended up being the ones left, and they consolidated that fishery down to, I believe it's about 80 boats now that actually work in it. And almost everywhere the catch shares come in to, quote, help a fishery, they reduce the size of that fleet by about 30% and consolidate it to the hands of those with the money to buy up the shares. And so when a fisherman falls on hard times, even if he owns his own boat, permit, shares, everything, he may end up having to sell some of those, and then he'll have to lease them back and say, you're catching a $4 a pound fish. You pay the person that owns those shares $3 a pound to catch that fish, and you're only making $1 a pound.
Wow. Is that kind of like a sharecropper?
Kind of, yes, ma'am.
Yeah. And it's, ooh, are we going back in time?
It's not so much a management tool as an allocation tool. And so those with the money and the clout, they get allocated the shares. And just like we have one version of it here on the East Coast with a fish called a wreck fish. And it has, there's 2 million pounds of that quota available. And one person controls all of it now because of that's the way catch shares work. In time, it consolidates it down to just the hands of, in that case, one person.
So if you catch that kind of fish, like by accident, you have to just throw it back.
Yeah.
You're not.
Unfortunately, it lives in the deep water that is illegal to fish in at this time, and they are illegal for us to keep. So if they do open this water back up, and I did accidentally catch one, then yes, I would have to discard it. And there's these fish live in like 1,000 feet of water. There's no chance of that fish living. And there's a lot of other fish that live there with them, queen, snapper, misty grouper, different kinds of fish like that, that are basically untapped resources that we could fish. And we could spread the pressure out to different areas rather than just consolidating it down to you fish for one kind of fish and discard everything else. You allow a fisherman, and everybody had their own little niche before. Some people like to fish the shallower water for certain kinds of grouper and fish that live there. Other ones liked a little bit deeper, and some worked at all of it. And depending on the weather and the time of year and the currents and things like that, people had to fish in different areas, so it split it up. And you can't sit at the dock and say, all right, this is the day that we're allowed to keep grouper. So we're going to go out there. We don't want anything else to bite. We want the grouper to bite. And I guarantee you the grouper won't want to bite that day. Everything else will, and you'll have to discard all that stuff that is illegal to sell. It's a nightmare scenario that they have set up. And it is mostly, I believe, in order to get the catch shares that they want.
Now, Chris, you've talked about creating solutions. How are your solutions being received by the bureaucrats?
Not well by them, but most of the people that I talk to really like them. And one of the things, instead of catch shares, what we could have is something called trip poundage limits, where, say, we can harvest 1,000 pounds of one species, 500 pounds of another species. And the proper way to do it, and they've actually done it in the past with other fish, was to set the quota, the trip poundage limit high for 75% of the quota. Once you reach that 75%, you adjust the remaining 25% of the quota, that trip poundage limit, up or down to a level that would fill the quota without any long closure. So if you had a month left in the season, you could actually increase the quota to, say, from 1,000 pounds to 1,500 pounds. If you had 4 months left, you would take that 1,000-pound trip poundage limit and reduce it down to, say, 300 pounds. And that way it would extend the season throughout the entire year, and you wouldn't necessarily have to target that fish with a lower trip poundage limit. But the ones you did catch, you could make wise use of and get a good price for them.
Wow.
And so it's not rocket science. Along with removing the size limits, would basically solve 90% of our problems.
Of the perceived problem.
And it would cost very little to implement or enforce.
I was just going to say, it just doesn't seem like, I mean, it just doesn't sound like it's that hard to do. So tell me on the Red Snapper closure, you guys basically won that with public pressure.
Yes, ma'am.
How do you, I mean, we put public pressure on all sorts of entities here, but how could we help you there?
Well, contacting the Secretary of Commerce and going to my website and just kind of browsing through there. You'll see stuff about 17A and B. You'll see different things and different people to contact about various issues. And so if you make your voice heard, even if it's just a simple email or phone call, a hard letter has more impact than either one of those. And I'll be making some more postcards once I find out. The council just had a meeting, actually just ended yesterday, down in Key West about how they're going to go about suspending the area closure. Will they suspend all of it or parts of it? And so I'm going to see what they decided to do, make a postcard addressing that issue, and I'm going to ask for the entire closure to be suspended, and that will probably end up going to the Secretary of Commerce again, because he is the final one to sign off on these laws. And I feel like if you put the pressure at the top, it'll trickle down, because they don't really like to be bothered with this stuff. They want the sub-bureaucracies to be the ones that handle that. So it will trickle down to them if you put the pressure at the top.
Wow. Okay. That makes perfect sense. So you need to put us on your radar out here and let us know when you have something coming up. In the meantime, people can go to freefish7.com. And if you've missed the beginning of this show, we don't always tell you this, but if you've missed the beginning of this show and you're going, what the heck? ReadingTeaParty.com, click on radio show, and you can catch this in the archive probably early afternoon on Sunday and any time beyond that. That way you can be in the know on this particular topic. This is something we can completely help you with. We are speaking with Chris McCafferty, a commercial fisherman out of North Carolina, here on We the People Radio today. This is KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
Welcome back to We the People, brought to you by the Reading Tea Party, home of fiscal responsibility, adherence to the Constitution, limited government. Go to ReadingTeaParty.com, click on the radio show link. All you need to know is right there on the media page. So we're back with Chris McCafferty, commercial fisherman from North Carolina, dealing with things a little familiar to us on some levels and unfamiliar on others. But one thing we both agree on, right, Chris? This is a nonpartisan fight. Tell us about something recently occurring in your neck of the woods when it came down to that.
Yeah, we had some Republicans in North Carolina and a few Democrats that sponsored a bill that was going to take our freedom to sell speckled trout, red drum, and striped bass. They would make them game fish to where they were illegal to sell or purchase to eat. And basically there's 3% of North Carolinians that hold a saltwater fishing license. And so 97% of North Carolinians would have lost their freedom to access these public resources had this gone through. And it would have been a backdoor way for them to ban any commercial fishing activity that interacted with one of those three species. So, again, with the postcard, I made one to go to our governor and had 2,000 of those sent to her. And that put the pressure on the people farther down the line to, you know, back off on this. And we had powerful lobbyists, people with a lot of money pushing this. And just because a few people or a couple of thousand people were willing to send in some cards, along with other organizations putting pressure on them, we were able to stop that this year in this session. And hopefully it's going to be buried forever, but it probably will come back up again. And so we had to be vigilant on all of this, because there's a lot of forces that are out there trying to take away not just our freedom to fish, but all kinds of freedoms. And if they don't get it the first time, they will come back again and try to take it.
Yes, they will. And, you know, such a misnomer, for instance, that the Tea Party movement is fed by the Republicans. And the truth of the matter is, we're so nonpartisan, it isn't even funny. If you go to a Tea Party meeting, I think you'll be shocked by the variety of people there. And we find, as we get deeper and deeper and deeper into this movement and this government takeover, that the folks that we form relationships and coalitions with are usually not exactly what anyone would have expected. So,
well, it's never politics-based, it's topic-based. And see, you're on our same topic. Regulations, eating your lunch, killing your business.
And it affects everyone, Democrats and Republicans, independents, libertarians. And we really, I mean, when you sit down and talk to somebody individually, we all have the basic same ideas of the way things should happen, again, like the fisheries. It's just a matter of how you reach those end goals. And can you do it without stealing your fellow man's money or freedom? You know, and what happens a lot of times is people in political groups and bureaucracies, they'll get a gang mentality to where they would do things and support things that would hurt their fellow man, the kind of things that they would never dream of doing individually, you know, but collectively in that bureaucracy or in that group think, they will condone, you know, stealing their fellow man's money, taking his freedom, destroying his job, doing all of those things that they just would not do on their own.
When you meet the folks that are the regulatory arm in your community, I mean, they live in your town.
Some of them.
Yeah. Do you have any sense that they've, you know, they need the job? We see this with some of our bureaucracies here that, I mean, they really need the job. They know it's not quite right. They're doing the best they can, but they've got to do what they're told.
Or to some extent, yes.
Or are these guys just kind of like hardcore ideology? This is the right thing to do, and, you know.
Well, I would think that a lot of them do think that what they're doing is right. Individually, again, most of them are good, decent people. It is collectively in their bureaucracy that they will do these things that they should not do to us. You know, but they just can't really think outside of the box, and they have puppet masters, basically, that tell them, this is what we want to happen. If you don't play ball with us, we'll just, you know, we'll destroy your job. We'll fire you. You know, and so that's what these council members, they're not necessarily full-time bureaucrats, they're part-time, and they get paid about $2,000 four times a year to go meet for a week and come up with these regulations. And so when they were doing this with the red snapper, I went down to Orlando, Florida, and I called on every single one of the council members to resign and protest rather than pass this law that they, all of them knew was based on bad science. And the chairman of that council had actually gone before Congress and testified to that effect. But not one of them had enough honor to do that. They all refused to step down, and I think 7 of the 13 of them signed off on taking our freedom.
Wow. And you...
but
and
I, you know,
how do they get on that council?
Excuse me?
These guys are appointed? They run it.
Yes, ma'am. They're appointed. The Secretary of Commerce has the final say on these regional council members that do this. And so this is federal fishery issues offshore 3 miles that we talk about in the Snapper Grouper Fishery and the National Marine Fisheries Service and stuff like that. You know, and so they're appointed to, I forget how long the terms are, but then they come up for reevaluation, and if they have not followed the basically what the puppet masters want them to do, they will be removed from that council, and they'll replace them with somebody that will follow what they want them to do.
Kind of a stacked
deck.
Just
like Jane Lubchenco. She's the head of NOAA. She's a special interest insider from two of the main lobbying groups, Pew few charitable trusts and environmental defense funds that are pushing for these laws that really are just destroying our fisheries. And I thought they didn't realize exactly how many fish were being discarded, and you know, that fishermen were losing their lives and their businesses, and you know, all sorts of negative impacts. So I contacted them before I went, you know, in public and doing this stuff. I went to the bureaucracies, I went to the environmental groups, I pointed out the negative impacts, offered some of the solutions that would mitigate those negative impacts, and they all just basically said, no, we support this or this, but not what you're saying. The Environmental Defense Fund, they're the ones pushing for the catch shares. Pew Charitable Trust wants the big area closures like they did with 17A and B. And so they're willing to allow these fish to die, their fellow Americans to die even, and to destroy our jobs and take our freedom, all in order to get the area closures and the end result, their agenda that they want to pass. And a lot of that is part of that Agenda 21. They follow those guidelines.
Yeah. How is the economy in your area? How has this affected families and jobs and the overall economic health of your community?
Well, it's devastating. When I tell people around here I'm a commercial fisherman, then you know, and I kind of start off with that, and they're like, "Oh, I'm sorry," you know, and yeah, they know that it's hard. There's people that have done this their whole life; that's all they know, and they're losing their homes, their boats, their businesses, all because of this. And it's just it's terrible to see, and it's unnecessary. That's the worst part, is that it's totally avoidable. But because we're just such a small group of people that we really don't have that influence, they can do it to us. And we, I felt.
Boy, that sounds familiar, doesn't it, Aaron?
That we really had no chance of doing anything about it. But I feel different now. I know that we can stop it. And all it takes is somebody to get the word out and let the public know that it is their freedom to access this seafood, and it is worth defending.
Sure, because you know, I saw on the steps of the Capitol in Sacramento 2 years ago, I guess, when we were trying to help the farmers in the Central Valley here, where they shut off all their water, and a bunch of the farm workers had signs that said, "If you love foreign oil, you're going to love foreign food."
Yeah.
And I was thinking,
right.
I was like, hey, you know, this kind of goes for you too. If you love foreign oil, you're going to love foreign fish.
Well, that's it. We have oil, we have natural gas, we have lumber, we have fish, we have food we can grow. We have all sorts of great resources right here in America
that will
employ people, help our economies, but we can't harvest any of it.
You know, it's kind of interesting. I was reading our local newspaper sometime this week, and there was a story environmentally related, and I was reading the blogs, and it was kind of interesting because the author of this editorial basically said that without these strict regulations against manufacturing and production, that we're going to pollute the environment, and consequently we need to have these regulations, otherwise we're going to end up with really cheap products. And what did we end up with? Cheap products from China. We get everything from China.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
The bad part is they don't pay us to make them in China because we're here. It's getting tougher and tougher for people to buy them.
Yeah, we had a great manufacturing center here in North Carolina doing furniture, making towels and clothes out of cotton, and basically all of that has been shipped overseas now, in large part because of the regulations.
And they say it's because these corporations, these business owners, they want cheap labor, but in fact what it's about are the massive regulations that are putting them out of business. They have no choice. They either go out of business or they ship it overseas. Either way, the employees lose.
Yeah. Yeah, they would much rather stay here in America and do it if they could. And that's what, yeah, the free market basically will take care of a lot of things as people become more conscious of the environment. And I think almost everybody in the Tea Party and everybody in America wants to have a healthy environment. Who wants to have smoggy air and polluted water, you know, and no trees, no forests, no animals? That's just not the way things are. When I was in high school, they always told me about all the rainforests were going to be gone, all the fish were going to be gone, all this was going to happen in 10 years. And now it's been 20 years, and I see that that's not the case, and that the environment is a very great resource. You know, it heals itself, it renews itself, and as long as we give it the slightest bit of a chance, it will be there forever.
Yeah. Are you seeing the same thing in your industry that we see in forestry, for instance? I mean, guys like Elizabeth's husband that are professional foresters, it takes a long time to go to school to have the credentials to do that, and they're having a hard time making a living, so You probably don't have a lot of people going into that industry. What about commercial fishing?
No, it's basically what we have is limited entry fisheries, especially in the snapper grouper fishery. So you had to buy somebody else out basically to get in it. And it's very expensive to do. So you're not getting a whole lot of people wanting to get involved in it. We had there for a while when people were thinking the catch shares were going to go through. We had a lot of fish houses that would buy up boats and permits and try to get a bunch of quota caught up so that they would be allocated that quota once the catch shares came into place. And so that, between that, and then you have a few recreational fishermen that buy the permits and the boats just for fun, and they can sell their recreational catch, basically. But there's nobody getting involved in it. No fisherman in this area would even dream of trying to encourage their son to follow in their footsteps. You know, and they don't think it'll be here the next generation.
And that goes for doctors, mortgage bankers, real estate appraisers, on and on and on and on. They're making it difficult to
Look at the ranchers and farmers. And so when you say it's expensive to get into, give people an idea of I mean, I know that everything is, you know, dependent on what you choose to do, but gives people an idea of the kind of cost that people have into these boats.
It's six figures to get your boat and permit and start fishing, you know, a minimum, and you can go up from there. But it's not cheap, you know, over $100,000 to get involved in it. And, you know, it's a long-term investment and something that you're looking at being, you know, that you'll do the rest of your life and hopefully would be able to sell that business when you're ready to retire and have a little bit of a nest egg there.
Oops.
Or have somebody else work the boat even and continue having an income from it.
Sure. The American dream.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, that was it. You could work your way up from being a deckhand and working, you know, you had to literally put your blood, sweat, and tears into it and do it. But you could work your way up to being your own boss and living the American dream, employing somebody, you know, providing those quality products to the consumers. But now they want everybody to be a ward of the state, you know, and they tell me, just go get a different job. Well, my only out is to file bankruptcy, basically, because I can't make enough money pushing carts at Walmart to pay for my boat and my permit and everything else.
Right.
Yeah, I wanted to do this the rest of my life. Wow. Now I'm trapped. I can't sell my boat or my permit because the value of it has been destroyed by the regulations. Nobody's wanting to get involved in it anymore.
Wow. And I think this is something that people really don't see coming. We need to take a commercial break here and thank our advertisers. We are speaking with Chris McCafferty here. You can check him out at freefish7.com. He's with us here on We the People at KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
Welcome back to We the People, brought to you by the Reading Tea Party. Coming up on the end of our second hour, we're talking all things stripping us of our rights. And if you're on the West Coast, you're familiar with the land grabs and the EPA regulations when it comes to ranches and the timber industry. Well, there's something on the other coast that exists, and that is the commercial fishing industry. And Chris, our guest, is from North Carolina, and he is his self-appointed activist trying to fight the takeover of his industry. So you were saying, Chris, before we went on our break, that there is an extraordinary amount of money that's given to these regulatory agencies that, in fact, is three times more than they really need.
Oh, certainly. Yeah, that one simple solution with the removing size limits and the trip poundage limit plan could basically erase the thousands of pages of regulation that they have in place. And then you could have a remnant population of the bureaucrats to collect data and manage those quotas and possession limits. But they get $1 billion of our money every year, and they steal that from our fellow Americans. You know, nobody just willingly gives it to them.
And this
and
is
so
NOAA?
Anyway, the total excuse me?
This is NOAA?
This is National Marine Fisheries Service.
National Marine Fisheries.
Billions and billions of dollars. I'm not quite sure what their total budget is. But, you know, the total annual sale of commercial seafood is only $4 billion a year. So they get a quarter of what our total sales are to regulate us out of business, basically. You know, and there is, they could, if they want to cut the budget, you need to start with the bureaucracies. And that's what I would like to encourage Tea Party people to, you know, when you talk to your representatives and your congressmen, tell them, when we cut the budget, we need to look at these bureaucracies. Ask the people that they, quote, help. How they are doing, if they're doing their job properly, if there's better ways that they could do it, more efficient ways they could do it. And I guarantee you we could cut probably at least a third from almost every bureaucracy there is and come out with a better end result if the people that were affected by it had some input. And you know, the bureaucracies, they tell me that if I don't like what they're doing, I get to talk to my congressman about it. So I get to talk to three people, and the rest of them will tell me I can't vote for them, so they will not help me.
Yeah, and that's the problem, that bureaucracies are not elected positions, so they sort of blow you off.
Yeah, absolutely. You get a runaround.
Well, where do you, I mean, I don't know. You know, I always kind of try to look at the end game. So let's say that they just pretty much regulate you guys out of business. I mean, anybody who's an independent. And then is the goal just large, you know, corporate commercial fishing? Or is it really no fishing off our coastlines?
It's some of both. You know, the different environmental groups have different agendas. I believe the bureaucracy would like to keep a remnant population, probably of the, they want to call it professionalizing the fleet, where it's big corporations that own it. And then that would justify their jobs. If they just shut it all down, then basically there would be no need for them.
That's what I was wondering.
So they do. Yeah, they do want to keep some of it there, but it's going to be, you know, where it's just the big bureaucracy, I mean, the big corporations that own it, and the small businessman, the heritage of it, the way of life will be lost, and it will just be about the money.
Is this up and down the Eastern Seaboard? I mean, I don't think your area is probably unique, or is it?
No, absolutely not. No, the Gulf of Mexico and the Northeast have both been devastated by the catch share program. We were lucky in the South that we were able to fight it off. My congressman, Walter B. Jones, actually defunded the catch share scam through NOAA in this year's budget, and is planning to do so in next year's budget. And that's because he hears from people like me and you know, my fellow fishermen that will call and ask them to do these things. And they will listen. If they start hearing from somebody that, you know, can articulate the point clearly and offer some solutions, they'll listen, and they will, you know, do things. Some of them could care less. But, you know, you need to let your voice be heard. If it's not, you know, then it's, you're just, what is that, what Edmund Burke said, that all that is necessary for the triumph of evil is that good men do nothing. And that's absolutely true. If we just sit back and do nothing, we will lose our freedoms, and we will deserve to have lost them.
Yeah, that's true. We will reap what we sow.
That's right. Yeah.
So now, what do you tell, how old are your kids?
Well, my daughter is 23 and my son is 18. They're my stepkids, but they're mine in my heart. I love them like my own.
I have some of those, too. And so obviously, they're not going into the family fishing business.
No. My son fished with me for a summer, and he goes with me every once in a while, but he wants to go to college. And that was that's one of the devastating things, is that just as I was about to put my kids in college, they pulled the rug out from under me with the fishery stuff. And you know, it's been where, you know, it's extremely hard. They had to drop out at one point and are getting ready to go back. Both of them are going to go back to college in the fall. And that's where, if people wanted to help me with a calendar, buying some calendars, that'll help put my kids through college as well.
Right on. Well, you know what? I figure we all have limited resources to spend. We do that a lot out here. We get people on the radio program that have a product, good or service, and they say, well, you know, I don't want to promote my thing. It's like, well, why not?
You have to.
Yeah, it's the free market.
Exactly. If patriots support other patriots, at least we know our money's going the right place
for the right reasons.
Absolutely. And you really can strengthen your weak dollar by doing that, you know. And then the free market, once you see my calendar, if you like the pictures and you want to buy it, fine. If you don't like them and you don't want to buy it, there's nobody forcing you to do it. You can, of your own free will, decide whether you want to help or not.
Isn't that fun? And you know what? I would like to, you probably make those prints. You would probably work out a deal with somebody to make some of those prints for them, wouldn't you?
Absolutely, yeah. Film-added prints. That's how I started. I would go to festivals and art shows and things like that when I wasn't fishing for years, and sold the matted prints. And then the calendar was a way for me to really go out and talk to, you know, I talked to thousands of people and hand out those postcards. And selling that calendar puts gas in my truck and pays my bills and, you know, gives me a way to do this. Otherwise, I could not afford to do it.
You know, there's an unintended benefit of this whole, I don't know, this whole grand scheme to strip us of our rights and take away our freedoms and pigeonhole us and shove us into little tiny communities. And that is that people are slowly but surely going back to relying on each other, relying on themselves, getting creative, because you kind of have to find a way around everything.
People are leaning on each other again. Communities are coming back together.
Yeah, I guess it's kind of a nice side effect.
I bet those bureaucrats never saw that one coming.
Well, that's it. That, you know, people have to rely on each other, like you said, and treat each other the way we would like to be treated. When Jesus went and caught fish commercially, and him and his disciples fed fish to thousands of people, what he was teaching them, the gist of it is, you know, the golden rule, do unto others as you would have done unto you. You know, and if we all looked at things that way and treated each other the way we'd like to be treated, we could have peace on earth, actually, and get rid of a lot of the government bureaucracy and politicians and have just a little bit of a government that is there for national defense, as it should be, then some state and local governments to take care of the rest.
And ironically enough, peace on earth, what so many say they want.
Well, the funny part of that story, though, if you think about it, you know, supposedly they only ate one fish. It kind of ruins the whole thing.
Well, I think he had five fish and he multiplied it out.
That's true. That's right. One loaf, five fish. I forgot.
Yeah, but he was able to, you know, multiply that resource, and he has that power now. If he sees that a stock of fish needs to be enhanced, something will. There's currents. There's tides. There's weather. There's things that happen that protect those fish, and even just the free market itself. Once it becomes not profitable to go harvest that species, people let up on it, and those that were just in it for the money are weeded out. And so then that stock rebuilds, and along with other fisheries, then the fishermen that are left can make enough money.
Hey,
so it just if they really just stepped aside and let nothing more than the free market dictate how the fisheries were managed, they would do a better job than they're doing now.
Exactly. Well, it's the same thing we see with cattle ranching and everything else. I mean, those people have a vested interest in the land being maintained. Same too with foresters, same too with timber companies. I mean, stripping the resource all the way to the bottom, it doesn't benefit anybody. But, you know, do me a favor. We started this program. You were talking to people about the scary fish, the tilapia and the shrimp that come from foreign places. Educate us a little bit on where the bad fish are, where the good fish are, you know, what people should look for. Give us a little consumer education.
Well, most seafood now is supposed to be marked from what country it's been landed in. So you want to look for stuff, of course, in America, North America at least, Canada. You know, they have some good fisheries there. You want to stay away from your Asian seafood. Nothing against the Asians, but that's where they do a lot of the sewage pits with the chicken coops, and they have very little regulation. A lot of those countries will do the shark finning, where they cut the fins off of a shark and let the live shark go with no fins to slowly drown. Now, and that's absolutely wrong to do that to a fish. And so if we're not allowed to do that in America, and that's a good law that they passed. There are some good things that they have done. But, you know, we're the most regulated fishery in the world, and so we really do have a responsible harvest, other than the regulatory discards that are a side effect of their regulations. But, you know, when you buy that seafood, it is not full of hormones and antibiotics. It has been treated with respect and used as it was intended. And you can support your fellow American by buying that local seafood. And go to your local seafood market and just talk to him for a minute. He'll tell you where that seafood came from and, you know, what he thinks about it. Most of the people that are involved in the fishing industry, either commercially catching them or the retail market selling them, and even the restaurants, they care about their seafood, and they want to sell the best possible seafood, and they want to be able to make a profit at it as well. But they had to turn to those foreign imports when the domestic product is not available.
Right.
And real quick side note on that domestic product and import stuff, NOAA gets a tax on all imported seafood. And so they have a vested interest in getting
more follow
seafood
the money.
Imported. Yeah, and that money, it was the Stolfinson-Kennedy Act that was supposed to be set aside to promote the domestic supply of seafood. And NOAA has been using that money, misusing it, to set up things like catch shares and to advance other agendas and really do the opposite of what that fund was set up to do, drive out the domestic product and return for the imports. That was part of NAFTA, too. They required a certain amount of seafood be imported because of NAFTA.
Wow.
So.
They get a tax on it when it comes in.
Huh. as I've looked into it, it's kind of, you know, sad to see what all is involved and how many people are against us. And I mean, I'm one person, and like I said, my voice means nothing. I have no money, so I really have no influence unless I can convince my fellow Americans that this freedom is worth defending and that we do have a chance if we stand united to defend all of our freedoms, not just this one. You know, and I will. If you contact me, and my email address is freefish7@hotmail.com, and give me a link to your website or whatever, I will sign your petition, I will make the phone call, and if everyone did that, we could remain free people. Otherwise, they are going to take one freedom away at a time from little minority groups until we are no longer free.
Yeah, you know, I'm thinking Fred Kelly Grant needs to find out about this. Ooh, we have to take a little break here. Thank our advertisers. I was all carried away in how we could maybe try to help you make a difference, because that's kind of always what we steer towards. You're talking to We the People. You're on We the People Radio right now at KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
Welcome back to We the People, again brought to you by the Reading Tea Party. Go to readingteaparty.com, click on the radio link, join the chat room, stream live, and next week, give us a call. We're going to finish up the last quarter hour with our very good new friend, Chris McCafferty from North Carolina, a commercial fisherman who is dealing with the same struggles and power grabs that everybody else on the West Coast is dealing with. So, Chris, what do you want to say this last short segment?
Well, I just want to let people know that, you know, that the vast majority of our South Atlantic seafloor has been closed off to almost all recreational and commercial bottom fishing. We're being forced to discard literally tons of fish every year that are perfectly good to eat but end up dying anyway. And, you know, this is your freedom to access a dependable supply of safe American seafood. And I really want to convince everyone that I can to get involved and go to my website. Look at it, you know, just read through it. You don't have to read it all at one time. Go back and tell your friends about it. That's it. If we have an open and honest debate about things and inform our fellow man about what's happening, then we can really make a difference, and especially if people are willing to make that phone call. Or, you know, when I get these next round of cards made, I'll be happy to send them out to people and, you know, different tea parties. I like to go around and talk to different tea party groups and different, any kind of group, really. Anybody that'll listen, I'll talk to them. And that's what, you know, if I can convince people that it is a freedom that's worth defending and get their, give them a simple way to get involved, I believe we can really make a big impact. And I want to try to encourage other people, you know, when if there's somebody coming after your freedom that you love, do something about it. Stand up. Defend your freedom. You know, we are free people, and this is what we're supposed to do. With great freedom comes great responsibility. And for us to just sit by and do nothing as they take one freedom after another, you know, is absolutely wrong. Plato warned us long ago that the price of apathy is to be ruled by evil men. You know, and that's exactly what's happening. Whether they're evil when they go into politics or not, somehow they become corrupted, and many of them do terrible things to us. And they think they're helping us in some cases. Other cases, they are out for their own power, their own money, you know, or whatever agenda that they have.
Now, Chris,
we need to stick together.
You know, there's a lot of people that that like to go out to the ocean, go on little fishing trips, and catch halibut or salmon, and you know, somebody's on the boat and they clean it all up and they package it up, put it on dry ice and send them home with it. How is that being affected?
Well, the recreational fishermen are being hit hard on this as well. They're closing down one fishery after the other. A lot of the recreational fishermen, you know, can't stand having to discard so many fish that don't quite meet the arbitrary size limit. And so some of them end up going home empty-handed after fishing all day because the fish biting that day didn't meet that size limit. And so I've talked to them around here where they said they discarded fish, 20 and 30 of them, had them floating up, belly up around the boat, but they couldn't take one home to eat without risk of getting a fine, having their boat seized, all kinds of terrible things happening. And so that affects your charter boat fleets and just the general recreational fishermen. You know, so that impacts your coastal economies when they can't run their boats.
Yeah, because who wants to, you know, pay to charter a boat with no guarantee that you're going to come back with anything?
Yeah, so as long as you have a possession limit in place, it's a bag limit on the recreational fishermen. So if you're allowed to keep two fish, really the responsible thing to do is to keep the first two fish that you catch and quit fishing for that species.
Yeah.
as opposed to throwing back five fish to try to keep two that, you know, meet that size limit.
Wow. Because that's one of the ways that a person could actually think that they were getting healthy fish if they actually go out on a charter boat and catch it themselves.
Absolutely. And it's very rewarding to go catch your own fish, be involved in the process of it, cleaning it, you know, and then to take it home and cook it. It's very, you're not going to get any fresher than that. And it's very clean, wild-caught seafood. Yeah, it's a great thing to take your kids out and have that experience with them, both your sons and your daughters, you know, and spend that time on the water, see the sights, and meet the people. Most fishermen that, you know, work on the water all their life are pretty colorful characters that, you know, have great stories to tell if you'll sit there and listen to them. You know, ask them questions. They want to talk about it with you, and they want people to realize that it's not that we want to destroy the resource. We do love it, and we want to responsibly harvest it. And they want to take the charter boat crowd. They want to take some people out there and share that experience with them.
Well, and I think people that get into any natural resource industry, they initially get into it because of their love of that industry. Like my husband, you know, he specifically chose the timber industry because he loved being in the woods so much. He thought, what a wonderful way to spend my life. You know, same thing with you. So, like you said, what person in their right mind would destroy the industry that supports them and the industry that they love?
That's right. Yeah.
It's just not true.
Yeah, you can. You've just got to have a balance there, responsible harvest, and talk with the people that are in the industry. You know, that's what these bureaucracies need to realize. You learn from their experience, their hands-on knowledge, you know, and don't just assume that they're out to try to get the most money out of what they can, and who cares about the resource for the long run, because that's just not the case and with most people.
Yeah, that's the part that's kind of frustrating. It's like, oh, it's all about greed. Oh, really? So is it better to, you know, live off of, I guess, tax dollars from people who can't work? It's a little snag there. Somebody's got to pay in. I'm looking at your website. You have a really great website. It's simple and well laid out, and the pictures are fantastic. It's freefish7.com for those of you that have just tuned in, perhaps. I hope you'll go back, listen to the archive of this program at readingteaparty.com, because this is great information. It's something you can send to other people. Once this show goes to the archive, you can email it to anybody. It'll have the sound file. It'll have all the links to Chris's website, and I think Robert even put a couple of pictures up there that you had sent to us in the email.
Yes, ma'am, we did.
But you've listed here Common Sense Solutions. So you've actually detailed out all the things that you've been talking to us about. Oh, and another really cool lightning picture. And then Help Stop 17A and B. Now, 17A and B, can you give people
that was the ones that was the red snapper closure with 17A, and then the offshore closure from 240-foot was Amendment 17B.
And these,
so you can read that. You'll see the comments that I gave at public meetings. You just go through the website, and you'll see. I'm not a website designer by any means. I just figured out how to do it the best I could, and tried to put it out there and explain it in a way that I hoped everybody could understand. Offered the solutions, and you know, I don't want to just berate, you know, the environmental groups. I do hope that they have the best interest of the fish and the fishermen at heart. But you know, they really didn't seem to, and so I do point out some of the people that are doing these things to us. And I hope people will realize that when you donate money, make sure that who you're donating to is actually going to be supporting causes that you care about and carrying them out in the manner that you agree with.
You know, what people have to remember is that even though not every issue affects them directly, there will come a time when they'll come for you. They'll find some issue that's important to you, and you'll be next.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
and that's where unions have so much power, is that they unionize and have numbers. You know, and if the American people, we don't need to have a formal union, but through the Tea Parties, if we can unite behind defending each other's freedoms, you know, we have millions of us that we could do this. And if everyone got on board with this plan, if I could just get 10% of the people in the Tea Party to send these letters and make these phone calls or send the postcards, we could win these battles and we could stop this attack on our freedom.
Well, I think the Reading Tea Party and the folks connected with it are going to be busting in and getting some mm-hmm. postcards and writing. We do a lot of letter writing, and I think sometimes the topics get a little bit stale, and we realize, gosh, you know, back to California, can't pass a budget, trying to raise our taxes. I mean, it's like same old stuff. You know, our story is sort of circular there. So it'd be kind of fun to look at something different. That's why when I read your email, I thought, hey, something new. Something we typically can't impact either.
It gets old with me, too.
Yeah,
I do like to have good news to report, you know, and we are having some impact. And
well,
I really
do
like to point out the success.
I think about you as one individual being willing to step up and fight for your freedom, and there are so many others that are doing the same thing. And there's
Absolutely.
There's nothing like, you know, the great American, the grassroots effort to hang on to, you know, all great things that this country has to offer. So truly, you're not alone. Yeah.
No, ma'am.
We need to.
I appreciate you giving me the chance to come on air and talk with you and share this message with some people that may not have heard anything about it.
Yeah, like all of us? Yeah, that's all of us.
Please do remember, it is your freedom to access that seafood through people like me, and it is worth defending. And
sure
I will
is.
Stand with you if you send me your information.
Yeah, I would recommend you go to a website, Trademark America. A really smart guy, Fred Kelly Grant, he's been helping us a lot with the closure of our roads in our forests and the water takings up in the northern part of the state and all sorts of different things. And I wonder if he's got something up his sleeve. It's kind of like, I don't know, I kind of feel like Dorothy, you know, come with us to see the wizard. Maybe he's got something in the bag for you.
He's a great guy and extremely knowledgeable, smart. He knows all those ins and outs of the federal government, so he's been able to help others.
Yeah, this would be a great thing to add to the pile. And
I'll definitely look him up.
I'm gonna work on that. As a matter of fact, I'm supposed to bring issues to that group. That's something I volunteered to do. So, here we go. Here's the issue. Do me a favor. Do you guys ever make a video? Do you ever do some video back there at all?
Actually, I've got a North Carolina Tea Party guy that wants to do a video and showing you how these fish are having to be discarded.
That's
and
awesome.
And so I'd be happy to send it to you once we do it.
Yes, please, because we do a movie night periodically. I'd love to have any recommendations of documentaries or things like that about the issue that people could get smart about. And if you guys do some sort of a local production, send it to us. We'll play it at our meetings,
okay.
And we'll put it on our website if you want us to. That would be
Absolutely.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So we bring the East Coast and the West Coast together, and we'll try to get everybody in between.
There you go. That sounds great.
Yeah.
Yeah, and as you travel around talking to people and getting different issues down, let us know if it's something that we could bring up, and especially give me a call. You've got my phone number, and you've got our email here. Give us a call, and we the people will give an update. That'd be kind of fun.
Yeah,
we don't get a lot of updates. It's kind of like more bad news. But especially if something good happens, let us know, or you're putting on a big push for some bill that's pending. Let us know. We would like to be part of that. So?
Yeah, great. Yeah, when I find out something about this area closure, I'll definitely be in touch with you and let you know. And hopefully the Tea Party out there in California will get involved. And, you know, like I said, if just a small portion of the people involved made their voice heard, then we really could have an impact.
Absolutely. Well, we like your attitude. And we like
been
the
great talking to you.
Been awesome talking to you. We have wrapped up our program for today. You guys can catch it on the archives at ReadingTeaParty.com. Click on radio show in a couple hours, and you will have this program in forever. You can just email it to your friends and everything else. Thanks, Chris, for joining us. We really appreciate
Thank
it.
You.
You've been listening to We the People
it,
Radio at KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
Thank you for listening to KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media. This is KCNR Shasta, Redding.